Greetings, podcast listeners. This is Dan with Spark R&D. Welcome to episode 6 of the Spark R&D podcast. In this episode, we chat with photographer Zach Clanton. Zach is an avid backcountry traveler in both the summer and winter months, as well as an accomplished outdoor and action photographer. The conversation you're about to hear is kind of a replica conversation that Zach and I had a few months back, say towards the end of August. As we were wrapping up that hour or so long conversation that we had, I kept thinking to myself, like, man, this would really make a fantastic podcast. It had just been such a fun conversation. And luckily, Zach thought the same thing, and he didn't mind talking again, even if it's in a slightly more interview-style conversation, which is what you were about to hear. In the conversation, we spend some time talking about Zach's approach to photography and a few other interesting topics, but we spend a majority of our conversation talking about Zach's trip last winter to the Alaskan Spine Mountain Range Zone, known as Stormtroopers. Zach is super well-spoken, he's extremely talented, and he has some really great insight into AK-style backcountry missions. I think that you're all really going to enjoy our talk, and so with that, I'm happy to bring you episode 6 of the Spark R&D podcast. Zach Clanton, thanks for joining me on the Spark R&D podcast today. How are you doing?
Oh, very good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. I know we've spoken on the phone before about some different projects, but it's great to actually have you locked down, talk a little bit of splitboarding, a little bit of the projects that you had going on last winter, and maybe just a little bit about what's coming up for this winter.
Yeah, definitely. Go ahead.
Cool. Well, for, you know, the listeners out there, can you maybe just introduce yourself, maybe tell us a little bit about how old you are, where you live, your profession. Just give us the Zach Clanton bio, if you will.
Well, I am 29 years old. I live in Alaska, and I am a freelance photographer.
You live in Alaska now. I've seen a lot of your photographs. Stunning, by the way. Where are you from originally?
Well, it's a complicated question that I got to explain to everybody, but I live somewhere different every 5 years of my life. Started off in Maryland, moved to Colorado when I was 4 years old. That's where I learned to snowboard when I was 8. And then right after I got into that, really into snowboarding, moved to Georgia, which is a big, big change. And then after Georgia, went back to Maryland, then to Utah for college, and then I moved to Alaska.
Right on. Are you a Ute? Is that the...
Technically, I was a Ute because I went to the University of Utah, so definitely.
Right on. And what brought you up to Alaska then?
Oh, well, you know, just like everybody's got big mountain dreams, Alaska's kind of the epicenter, and everyone who wants to ride those dreamy spines you see in the movie wants to make a visit, you know, at some point in their life. But, you know, it all kind of started for me with a 7-month road trip, and I actually had zero plan of moving there. It was not even on my mind at the time. You know, I thought I was going to be in Utah forever. The whole thing was kind of sparked from seeing before Jones Snowboards, before, you know, anything was going on with Deeper, Further, Higher. JeremyJones.net was like a big source of inspiration for me, and I'd always see what that guy was up to. When I saw for the first time, this is like one of those aha moments, I saw these photos of Jones and a lot of other guys ripping around with Drake and Haynes looking for places to snowboard with an airplane. And I just thought to myself, you know, there's nothing cooler than that. That is like, I can't imagine anything better to do with my time. And, you know, after seeing that, I just wanted to go and do it myself, just like so many others, you know. So I kind of hatched this whole plan to go up to Alaska on a 7-month road trip, meet a bunch of my Utah buddies up there. And I didn't really know what I was going to get into, but all I knew I really wanted to do was go on a glacier camp. So that's kind of how it all started for me.
Being a freelance photographer that you mentioned, how did you get into, or I should say, when did you get into photography?
Well, I guess I could say I got into photography when I got my first SLR. And that was a film one when I was in 8th grade. And so kind of what sparked that was, you know, just growing up snowboarding and skateboarding, it was never like a plan to be a professional photographer or anything. It was just kind of like part of the culture, you know, you like shoot your own friends skateboarding, and then you hand the camera over and, you know, get shots yourself. So it was sort of part of the culture, and I just bought a camera because I wanted to film my buddies and get shots. And then going into high school, taking photography classes, being a big advocate of the darkroom and just loving that stuff, it kind of only became a an idea for a job when I didn't want to work anything else. You know, I wanted my income to have a direct relationship to what I loved. So
awesome. So it kind of sounds like, you know, your hobby, like photography, was a hobby before it was a career. And, yeah, you know, my next question was sort of like looking at your hobbies. You know, I look and follow you on Instagram, and I think a lot of people, you know, on your blog would see a ton of climbing photos, whether it's, you know, in the summer and doing a lot of different climbing up in Alaska, ice climbing in the winter, as well as, you know, the split boarding in the backcountry. So it sort of, you know, I was going to ask you what came first, but it sounds like, you know, your hobbies sort of grew together. Would that be an accurate way to kind of state that?
Yeah, certainly. And the coolest thing about photography is that it really doesn't matter what season it is. Like, that's the one constant thing I can do with everything, and all seasons and all the activities I love to do. So yeah, I would definitely say the activities come before the photography, because it's almost like the photographer in me is the observer, you know, and it's just like the activity comes first, certainly.
You spend a lot of time in the backcountry, as we were just saying. What is it about that experience that keeps you going back, whether it's for the actual recreation, the photography, and the images that it produces, or the mix of the two? But, you know, what keeps you heading back and farther out into the backcountry?
Oh, I'd say for me, you know, kind of the whole idea behind backcountry and why I'm so attracted to it is not only to be in these really cool, wild places, but to see my snowboarding as a creative outlet and see the mountains in that way. And, you know, whether it's snowboarding or climbing, I kind of like to see that proverbial blank canvas and be able to draw my own line on it, you know? Like, I think we're all attracted to lines, like whether it's the dreamy spines you see in Alaska or it's a splitter crack going up a mountain. And, you know, only in these truly wild places can you draw your own line and just be a creative person. And that kind of comes from the photographer in me as well. Having your own creation to call your own.
How do you balance, you know, wanting to ride a certain line or climb a certain route versus going maybe a different direction so that you can get the shot that you're looking for? Because sometimes you can't have them both. And while it's, you know, super fun to be out there, I know from, you know, doing some action photography, not anywhere near on your level, but, you know, you have to kind of be looking at the shot, and that isn't, you're not always in the place where you exactly want to be, as far as the recreation aspect of things go. So, like, where do you draw that line to get the shot and still be able to go out there and enjoy the activity and not only be the photographer?
Well, I guess it's totally different, whether it's snowboarding or climbing, because when it's climbing, especially alpine climbing, photography is just a complete side note. You know, like I'm part of the team that's climbing, and I'm just getting shots along the way, and nothing is set up for photography almost ever. So I'm kind of just taking the camera out when I don't have my hands on the rope or the rock. So that's how it is for climbing. But with snowboarding, I definitely make sacrifices for the photography, and I'll definitely take, you know, scraps or second tracks or do the kind of obscure line to the side so that I can shoot whoever it is, you know, like it doesn't even matter, skier, snowboarder, pro, non-pro, like I will put the shot in front of everything else and totally sacrifice a little bit of my boarding. But, you know, the way I see it is, you know, being a splitboard photographer is the best case scenario when it comes to that. Cause like a lot of my other buddies who do a lot of jumps and handrails and stuff, like they don't even strap into a snowboard. And, for me, like if I'm crossing a track or two, it's not a huge deal. Or if I'm taking a line kind of next to the cherry line, that's totally fine for me. Like what it's about is walking away with something that's going to be not only in the memory banks, but on your hard drive, as long as it doesn't crash, for the rest of your life. You know, like I love to take something home with me and like have a singular image that can kind of describe an entire experience. And I know that's like almost impossible to do a lot of the time. And usually it's kind of a collection of images that show an experience, but every once in a while I can kind of lock it all down into one image that I think really represents the true experience. And so that to me is worth like kind of taking that B grade line, or, you know, sometimes I get lucky and get to ride the choice one as well. But turns out I'm always the last person to drop, and I'm always standing on top of a mountain looking down at all my buddies at the very bottom, just tiny like ants. And that's cool in itself, you know, being up, the top of a peak by yourself, and I can pretty much count on always being the last one just because of that. So,
you know, you mentioned lines before, but when you're out in the backcountry, you know, especially specifically like shooting splitboarding or snowboarding, what are you looking for in a shot? Because I feel like your images, they kind of have a specific look, and some of that is just the nature of being in Alaska and sort of the grandeur of it. But what's Zach Clanton looking for when he goes out trying to find, you know, that shot, that singular image that's really going to capture the essence of, you know, why you're out there?
That's a super good question, I definitely think about that a lot. I would say number one, pink pow. That's my absolute favorite thing in the whole world. So whether that's sunrise or sunset, doesn't matter to me. Pink pow is absolutely my number one thing I want to have in a shot. But, you know, like I said, sometimes it can't be all boiled down to one image to show an experience. And sometimes you have like a landscape shot that shows a lot of depth and you see the mountains and kind of that feeling of just being out there in an endless wilderness. And then you have the other end of the spectrum where you have a zoomed shot on a spine wall of someone riding something with a lot of texture and you see where they're going, where they're coming from. So ideally to me, I want to combine the two. You know, I want to have kind of a beautiful landscape shot, but within a person in that shot to show context and the action. So if I could describe the perfect shot, it would be pink pow, action with a long drawn out, landscape type depth image behind it. And so I've only really captured that like probably two or three times in Alaska or anywhere, where I kind of have those three things together and make the perfect shot. And one of those, happened this year, another one in 2015 and another one in 2013. And I think that's like the only time I've really put it all together into one shot. And of course there's other instances too, but like, as far as, you know, doing exactly what you described, like putting together my ideal shot, you know, it doesn't happen very often.
That's a really good segue. And, you know, you spoke of one of those ideal shots really happening last year. You went on a backcountry trip. You guys were glacier camping and you were out in a zone in Alaska called Stormtroopers. First, you know, Alaska to the non-Alaskan, which is probably a majority of our listeners and myself included, is gigantic, obviously. So we're always like, oh, you're up there riding spines in Alaska. That could mean a lot of things. So you guys went to a zone called Stormtroopers out on the glacier, or at least on the snowfield, to kind of camp out and, you know, wait for the weather, find those lines. Where is Stormtroopers, just to give us a little bit better idea of a starting point for this part of the story?
So Stormtroopers is next to Haines, Alaska, and is on a mountain called Four Winds, which is actually the opposite of remote. You know, like a lot of places we go to are kind of these far-flung, way out into a national park or some wilderness area, 100 miles from the nearest road, something like that, you know, that feels really out there. But Stormtroopers is actually like, you know, you could probably strap in your board and be to the road in a few hours. I think, it's not, the appeal of it was not that it's in the middle of nowhere that no one's ridden there before. The appeal of it is that it's actually an extremely well-known heli shredding area that's actually in the backyard of Alaska heli skiing. So it's appeared in movies, you know, I think since 2006, everyone from Jeremy Jones to Gigi, skiers like Sage Catabrigo-Losa, all kinds of guys, like some of the heaviest hitting pros have all ridden Stormtroopers. And so in 2015, I was ripping around with Drake and his Super Cub one day. And we were looking at the thing and he told me that, you know, it actually had been zoned out of heli boundaries and that no one had attempted on foot yet. So that's kind of where inspiration came from.
Right on. And for this trip, who went with you on this particular trip that we're referencing?
So it was actually several guys on that. It was Tomas Delfino and my buddy Tony Pavlantos. And then we had two filmers along the way. So that was JR and Pierre, the Almo filmer guys.
Nice. And they are creating a whole edit just about this exact trip, aren't they?
Yeah, sure thing. They're actually making a 30-minute documentary about the whole experience that, you know, I'm sure only tells part of the experience, but those guys are super good at what they do. So yeah, we're excited to release that.
Awesome. When is that coming out? When can people start to look for that?
So the teaser is going to be out in November and the movie itself in December.
So, you know, you talked about getting back to Stormtroopers and how it's a little bit more accessible. How did you guys actually get back there?
So for years now, I've actually been looking at walking up there, and there's actually a dirt road that you can take a snow machine up and or fat tire bike or skin in, whatever, and you can get right up underneath the drainage that goes into it. And there's a super wild ice fall that kind of spills into it. And so there's certainly a way to walk in, but we flew in. We landed in a pocket glacier about 3 or 4 miles away. And we didn't walk in because the approach is actually very, very dangerous. It's not not only very steep, but it's extremely avalanche prone. And the way you got to hit the face for sunrise is just would be kind of unlikely to walk in there and do it how you'd want to do it. You might be able to make a quick strike of it if you have the perfect weather and you started the night before. But as far as like making a film about it and doing things how we really wanted to get the shot, I think that's why we flew in.
Right on. And you guys were all set up, camped out, everything like that. Like you were really in it so that you could make the documentary, get the shot, and do it how you wanted to.
Yeah, certainly. And it all kind of started after checking it out in 2015. Drake and I actually tried to land there because it's not straightforward at all like so many of the other glacial landing areas where you can kind of just land in this big, wide, flat area and then be right next to your lines. It's kind of a more complicated mountain so that you essentially have to walk a really long way, whether that's from the road or that's from the nearest camping zone. First of all, we had to establish the landing zone. So we took his small aircraft, the Super Cub, and in 2015 just started circling and circling and circling. And because a lot of it is these old decrepit glaciers or not glaciated at all, it wasn't straightforward at all. And Drake just really didn't like it. And so we never ended up actually putting the plane down in 2015 and kind of wrote the thing off as far as a camping situation and just kind of started looking into more walking in options. And then this year in February, we started doing the whole process over again and found a landing zone much farther away and weren't even sure it was, you know, a very good idea to camp that far and have to walk so far. But then we came in another day and established a second landing zone, and Drake and I parked the plane, put the engine cover on, skinned up, right up and over a call to where our advance camp would end up being, and in February stood right underneath Stormtroopers. Started digging pits and kind of just got the fire in my belly to really see through my vision on that. And once I was standing underneath it and looking at the grandeur that is Stormtroopers, there was just no way I couldn't follow through. So yeah, that's when I knew it was actually going to happen. And then I had Tomas and Tony kind of sign up for the mission, and somehow we convinced those guys to come over and make a film about it. Yeah, that was kind of the whole beginnings of it.
And you had worked with Tomas before, both of you being snowboarders and splitboarders, so you were, you know, comfortable with him in the mountains, which is a big thing when you're, you know, obviously farther back in the backcountry. You need to know and trust the people that you're around with, but also someone that you want to work with and someone that can handle that kind of terrain too, as far as a content, video, photography, big mountain mission. You felt pretty good going in, riding with Tomas. How did he do out there?
Oh man, that's a loaded question. 'Cause like, I definitely saw, you know, some of the best snowboarding I've ever seen in my life happen. And I wouldn't have gone out there and done a trip like that with someone I didn't have experience with. Like, you know, when I first met him, I knew he was a super solid rider, but I hadn't spent any time in a tent with him. And most of it, like, doing a trip like this is not necessarily, like, how good the snowboarder is or, like, what their status in the industry is or anything like that. It's just, like, how good of a hang are they? Like, are you going to drive each other insane, like, sitting in a tent for a week? You know, like, you just want to hang out with your buddies. Tomas, first and foremost, is just, like, the raddest guy ever to hang out with. Like, I love him to death. He's so much fun and has, like, the best, most positive energy of anyone I've ever met. And if you watch the film, or even the film we made last year, you'll see that instantly. And so I met him in the Aleutians during a Rome Snowboards project down there called Fine Snowboarding. For the most part, it was just horseshit weather and really, really bad snow. I mean, it's just like continually ripping 60 miles an hour wind down there. You can like barely hear your friend when he's like 2 feet away from you. And, you know, we had a really, really good trip, but it's so challenging down there. And I watched Tomas ride some of the stuff that was just, like, I didn't even want to touch, but he did it so fluidly and so powerfully that I was like, man, if I get this guy on some of these powdery spines that Alaska is so well known for, then that's where he's really going to shine. Like, I could kind of just see that he was a diamond in the rough for Alaska snowboarding. So 2 years later, we got him back out, and he came with Cody Booth and I to the Tordrillos, and we went to a really, really cool zone on the Trimble Glacier. But, you know, because of this massive storm system moving in, we had to leave before we got on any of our main objectives. Like, we had a really, really good trip, but kind of had to leave too early. None of us wanted to go. So it was a kind of a stepping stone, another stepping stone. And then once I had kind of committed to the Stormtroopers idea for the season, I knew he was definitely the guy for it. So did everything in my power to convince him to come out. And sure enough, he showed up, and yeah, we had an unbelievable trip. Like, watching Tomas go on that ladder of progression from, you know, being a park rider interested in the backcountry to riding Stormtroopers, which has only been snowboarded and skied by like all the, you know, big dog pros that there are. Yeah, like, it's just so wild. I'm so proud of him, you know.
From the photos, it really looked like he could stay on the spines, which is much easier said than done. I think when you're up there and you're looking at high consequence terrain, it looked like he obviously made the effort, but he had the skill to really keep himself on a specific spine the entire way down, which is no easy task.
Yeah, it was unreal. You know, I think actually the line that that we were kind of calling the king line on Stormtroopers, which is Tomas's best line and probably the cherry line of the whole face, was actually ridden by Jeremy Jones in 2006. I think it was in Tangerine Dream, if I remember correctly. And they're saying that that's where Jeremy Jones invented the karate chop to like keep himself on the spine. So like, you know, when you're falling off either side, he would like, and it's so steep, he had to karate chop it to stay on there. So to watch Tomas like flow down this thing without like having to etch his way down it, like he was actually ripping this thing. And this is the kind of thing that I'd probably be like hop turning down and taking like 45 minutes to get down this wall. And yeah, Tomas was just shredding, you know. It was incredible to watch.
On a big trip like this, how do you guys handle snow safety?
So that's also a really good question, because this year in Alaska in general, super spooky. We had a funny rain crust develop that ended up just rotting out underneath it. And by April, which is typically the most stable, best time of year with the best weather, I was digging pits all the way up to about 5,000 feet with like 4 foot hard slab on top of a crust with just buckets of facets underneath and then another rain crust. So it was like this weird sandwich of the lurking dragon, the sort of the spooky moderate, the like, well, it's probably not going to slide, but if you do trigger it, it's going to be catastrophic.
High consequence.
Yeah. And you know, that stuff, like I see a lot of people go out and ride shit in Alaska when it is conditions like that. And most of the time nothing happens, but to me, it's just not really worth it to even do anything when it's like that. So we were kind of staying off anything that was in that perfect zone that you want to snowboard, the kind of stuff that you can go really fast down. The most inviting snowboard terrain was actually the scariest. And in fact, we had tons and tons of terrain around our camp that was really, you know, at our base camp and our advanced camp that looked so appealing and had such good snow on it, but we just didn't touch it. So to answer your question, the way we sort of mitigated the risks and made Stormtroopers safe is just by choosing the steepest, spiniest, scariest snow terrain you can imagine. Like, it was horrifying to stand on top of that looking down it, and you just had butterflies in your stomach thinking about how you're gonna connect all the spines and not get sloughed out. But at the same time, it was totally safe, you know. Like, we didn't see a single bit of avalanche activity the entire time. No avalanche crowns, nothing moved on us. It was absolutely stable because it was so steep that it didn't have that funky snowpack that the rest of the stuff did. So you know, it looks all dangerous and wild, and it probably only is if you fall down the thing or get sloughed out. But as far as avalanches go, you know, it's totally safe and no cornices on top, no big gaping birch runs, no massive crevasses underneath. It's kind of this perfect arena to go and just purely focus on snowboarding. Like it came down to once we had figured it out and the approach and cramponing up the backside, which was also really safe because it was this frozen avalanche debris south facing. So you just crunch right up the backside and all of a sudden you're standing on top looking down this big powdery north face. And it came to a time where you could just focus on how far you wanted to take your snowboarding and not worry about objective hazard or avalanche safety or anything. So a lot of the times you're dealing with at least one thing, like a big cornice or a big hole at the bottom or something to avoid. But in this particular instance, and stormtroopers in general, it's just this perfect arena to like challenge yourself as much as possible as a snowboarder without worrying about all the other stuff.
Yeah, that whole face looks incredibly technical. So the fact that you feel pretty darn good about the avalanche aspect of it and you can concentrate on the technical aspects, slough management and really just staying upright, seems like a huge advantage on a trip like that and on a line like that.
Oh, certainly, certainly. And what was funny about this year is if you compare photos of stormtroopers this year to like when it was in all the videos in the past decade, I think the reason they call it stormtroopers is because when it gets a lot of snow, it forms up all these little pillows all over the spines, and maybe they look like stormtrooper helmets. I don't know. That's kind of my own theory. But this year, all those pillowy areas were actually much more like vertical lines and spines because it's actually a much lower snow year, and it was a really cold year. So not only do we get less snow, but it came in cold and windy. And so in general, Haynes this year kind of just like all the classic spine zones didn't really form up. And we were flying around as early as mid-February looking at stuff, seeing how it was coming along. And stormtroopers is so rocky and nasty and all these other lines that are just all dreamy and beautiful by March and April were just horrible. You know, like the snow was all piling up in the glaciated basins at the bottom and not on the vertical faces. It just is too cold and yeah, it didn't stick like it normally does. So it was actually kind of a good thing because by the time we got the wet snow, it was getting later in the year. And so stormtroopers sort of formed up late and it even had these like quadruple birch runs and all this nasty stuff. And when Drake and I were standing underneath it in February, he was like, oh man, like if it doesn't snow a lot, like you guys aren't going to do this. And I was kind of agreeing with him, you know, because it just looked so intimidating and horrible. But by the time we showed up, it was just perfect, and actually, I think it's more rideable with less snow than more snow, which is odd, but true.
You know, you've talked a little bit about your own kind of methodology into planning and how you go about a trip like this, but if you were going to give advice to an avid recreationist, it doesn't necessarily have to be stormtroopers, but, you know, just planning these multi-day camping objective-based missions, what are some of the things to consider? And maybe just what are some tidbits about the planning process, you know, whether it's a ways out or just leading up to the trip that maybe aren't obvious to the everyday splitboarder and adventurer?
Well, I mean, maybe the most obvious is the most important, or at least the way I see it. And two things come to mind, food and warmth. So, like, obviously you need both on a trip like that, but I find that the fastest way to like get over glacier camping and just like wanting to get out of there is if you're not eating well and if you're not sleeping warm or just staying warm in general. Like you're always going to freeze your ass off in certain times, but if you can't like get in your tent and sleep well, then you're going to be over it pretty quickly. So staying super warm, having like more down than you could ever imagine, even if it doesn't seem like it's going to be that cold, that's the biggest thing. And then just eating well. Like I know a lot of people go out there and like want to bring MREs or freeze-dried food or whatever, but like, man, if you're flying into a zone, eat well. Like you're going to feel so much better. You're going to be way more motivated. So like concentrating on the food aspect is like the biggest thing for any trip for me, and like planning out great meals. And a lot of people think you can't eat super well out there, but it's like, man, I bring tons of fresh vegetables. And then when I run out of fresh vegetables, I have frozen vegetables. And then I'm eating meals like pesto salmon pasta, and we make like glacier pizzas, and we make like all kinds of good stuff so we're like still staying stoked and well fed, because just existing in a cold environment, you burn so many calories. Like one trip I was camping out in consistent negative 40, negative 30 degree temperatures, and we were eating unbelievable amount of calories every day, and I still came like out of the trip like 10 pounds lighter or something. So yeah, just trying to feed yourself well and focusing on the food aspect. I think a lot of people kind of overlook that, and that has nothing to do with like logistics, or, you know, you can kind of apply that to any trip, winter or summer.
Do you have any thoughts on things that maybe aren't as obvious for someone that's planning this trip, whether it's permitting or organizing your rides, or just anything that you've taken away from the multiple trips that you've done?
I would definitely say recon. And by that, I mean flying. I probably have done more flying just to go look at stuff than I have to actually fly and go land places. Just going out there and doing the recon is one of the biggest things. Like, a lot of people just want to show up to Alaska and pack their bags and go out under the glacier. But not only using the airplane to go and see what's forming up that year, but just to, you know, expand your own horizons and look at potential safety routes to get out of there, if what would happen if you need to walk. But yeah, that's the biggest thing, you know, is just going out there and putting your time in and going and doing the recon. I think that's a lot of things, or one thing that a lot of people skip over.
In Alaska, the heli-ski snowboard guided trip scene is pretty huge. You seem to take a lot of pride in more human-powered missions. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I like the idea of being self-sufficient in the mountains.
You know, when it came to stormtroopers, were there any considerations that you guys had to make in the planning process, just being that far back and the human-powered aspect of this kind of mission, which was very purposeful, and you had your low camp, you had to get up to a high camp too. Were there any things that you had to take into consideration because of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes whether you are 20 minutes from the road or 200 miles from the road, a lot of the accidents, all the stuff that goes on in splitboarding happens in like 20 minutes, you know, like it doesn't matter how close or far you are. So whether it's a day tour or you're out in the absolute middle of nowhere, I think just being super on top of your avi game is really important. Like, even when we were on the glacier and it was sunny out and we probably should have been going, like, we took the time to do our beacon practice, get dialed as a team, and make sure everyone's on par with the crevasse rescue also. Yeah, I think that it's just a good practice to be in, like they always teach you in the avalanche classes, but I think it's equally important, more important in the middle of nowhere, but the consequences can be the same no matter where you are.
If people were looking for, we've been talking all about stormtroopers, if somebody wanted to find photos from stormtroopers and this specific mission, where would you send them?
So there's a new article out with Snowboard Mag right now online that's got a little story about Tomas and sort of some of the experiences I was just talking about the Aleutians, the Tordrillos, and this year at Stormtroopers. They just dropped a cool little gallery, and I wrote a story about it. And then, like I said before, also, the documentary is going to be coming out in December, so that's going to be something to look forward to and watch how Tomas has progressed. So also, if you look at the Find Snowboarding Aleutians, that's the first trip I was talking about. You can find that on Vimeo or YouTube. And then there's the Eco Power Almo chapter, last year's Tordrillos trip. So there's a lot to watch out there.
Nice. And did you say you might have a couple photos coming out in Backcountry Mag as well?
Yeah. So that pink POW shot that I was talking about, that was kind of the combination of everything I was looking for. That's going to be in the November photo annual of Backcountry Mag. And yeah, looking forward to see that one in print.
Yeah, us as well. I think I know what shot you are referencing. I'm pretty confident I do. And it is an amazing photograph.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. What's on tap for this winter, Zach?
Going back to Haines right after Thanksgiving. Going to go and drive on back down there and spend my winter in Haines. It's probably my favorite spot in all of Alaska, and I just can't help myself. I keep going back there like a moth to a flame.
Zach, where can people find more photography of yours or learn more about what you're up to if they were so inclined?
So I've got a few online portfolios on my SmugMug website, which is zclantonphoto.smugmug.com, and that's also a print shop as well. And that's kind of sort of my best of type stuff for all my snowboarding, climbing, landscape, all of that. And then if you want to see any recent stuff or kind of what I'm up to in the now, you can check out my Instagram, which is just zclanton.
Right on. Zach, this conversation has been great. You know, you're up to a lot of really cool things, and, you know, we wish you all the luck in the future. But I just wanted to say thanks for taking the time to chat with us on the podcast. Let us know a little bit about what you're up to, and talk to us about the trip that you did last year with Tomas and Stormtroopers. That was really cool. The photographs I've seen from it are fantastic. I encourage all the listeners out there to go check it out. Like Zach said, on snowboardbag.com, and keep an eye open for the trailer for the Elmo film coming out this year, or the actual film. So thanks a lot for joining me, and, you know, I look forward to hopefully getting you out splitboarding with whether it's Tomas or some of our other riders again. Just really appreciate you and all the work that you're doing.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me, Dan.
Yeah, it's been our pleasure. Hang around for 1 second, Zach, but for the purposes of the podcast, we are all done. All right, my thanks again to Zach for joining us on the podcast. As Zach said, head over to snowboardmag.com and check out the article they did on the Stormtroopers mission. Some cool stuff there for sure. I also recommend giving him a follow on Instagram. He is always dropping good stuff from all of his adventures. And lastly, keep an eye open for the documentary coming out this December from Elmo Films that follows their mission to Stormtroopers. Should be really good and give a cool account of their trip last winter. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast. We always appreciate that. Thanks, everyone, for listening. This has been Episode 6 of the Spark R&D Podcast.